Welcome to the Next Level Human Podcast. As a human, you have a job to do. In fact, you have four jobs: to earn and manage money, to attain and maintain health and fitness, to build and sustain personal relationships, to find meaning and make a difference. None of these jobs are taught in school, and that is what this podcast is designed to do: to educate us all on living our most fulfilled lives through the mastery of these four jobs. I'm your host, Dr. Jade Tita, and I believe we are here living this life for three reasons and three reasons only: to learn, to teach, and to love. In this podcast, I will be learning, teaching, and loving right along with you. I'm grateful to have your company. Here's to our next level. All right, everybody, welcome to the show today. I'm excited today because I am meeting a new friend for the first time. So I want to tell you a little bit about Kelly Gardner, the guest today. He is a man's expert, and this is a topic that I think is very, very important. And we'll get into sort of why I think it's important. Obviously, Kelly does this for a living, so obviously it is very important to him. But I want to tell you all a little bit about how we got together. So I'm a recent transplant to Asheville, and you are as well, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so we both are recent transplants, but we have mutual friends. Mm-hmm. And I just learned that Kelly actually went to school, high school, was raised in Charlotte. I was raised in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, for those of you who aren't familiar with North Carolina. Winston-Salem sort of smack dab in the middle of the state, and Charlotte is about 2 hours, north and
south,
or south and west,
yep,
from Winston-Salem. So we actually grew up pretty close together. And by the way, how old are you? I'm 48.
I'm 45.
Okay, so we're basically the same age as well. So we have some overlap there. Our mutual friend, we have two mutual friends, really cool humans. One a psychologist and the other one a local business owner and builder. Soon as I met these two people, they were like, you have to meet Kelly. You guys would totally hit it off.
Yep.
And it sounds like your story was the same. And so I was like, you know, and of course, the way schedules go and stuff, it took us a while to do this. But here we are now, and I'm excited about this conversation because from my perspective, I don't do a whole lot of this on the show. Mm-hmm. But, and this is something that you may or may not know about me, I did do men's work for a while and was on several panels, mainly with women who are trying to understand men.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
So Guru Jagat, mm-hmm, who used to, I think, John Weiland.
Yeah, John Weiland's a really dear friend of mine.
Was on a couple panels with him as well, and mm-hmm, I heard you know him, right?
So yeah. I have a men's group, mm-hmm, a group of 13 men that I travel life with. We connect with each other every single day, mm-hmm, in a deep way, getting vulnerable, getting a real about what's going on, and John is one of those men that's in, yeah, that group.
Cool. So I have met him. We're not friends, but I really enjoyed the time I spent with him. I think it was me, him, and Justin Patrick Pierce. Does that name sound familiar?
I don't know.
Might have that wrong. But anyway, so I haven't been doing this work as in-depth as you, and I'm going to really just be enjoying this conversation. So I want to start. I have my own agenda where I want to start, and I want you also to have your agenda. But one of the things that I thought, right before we started, I sent Kelly a text, mm-hmm, and I said, maybe we want to start with, you know, something a little controversial that we may or may not agree on. Mm-hmm. And so Jordan Peterson is a very popular figure, especially, yeah, among young men.
Very much.
And he has a very popular quote that I thought maybe we will begin to talk about this male issue around. Mm-hmm. And the quote, let's see if I can do it off the top of my head. He essentially says, a good man is not a harmless man, mm-hmm, right? A good man is a dangerous man who has that under voluntary control.
Absolutely.
And so I wanted to sort of start there because there's a lot I love about Jordan Peterson. There's, mm-hmm, also a lot I don't like about Jordan Peterson. But I also think that I'm all for, and a lot of people listen to this podcast know, I'm one of these people who just loves debate, charitable, mm-hmm, debate, because I think that's how we learn. When you get in the room with smart people who, absolutely, believe something a little bit different than you, mm-hmm, and you get to banter this stuff around, you can have
have a really enlightened conversation. So why don't we start with this whole idea? What is, from your perspective, a good man, and how does that quote actually hit you when you hear it?
Yeah, for sure. You know, one of the first things I would say is, you know, I seek to understand. I work a lot with the compassionate communication, and we try to connect before we correct. And I love this idea of how can we continue to debate about ideas that we disagree on in a way that we can disagree without being disagreeable.
Yeah.
Try to find how to understand each other. And so what I think what he's talking about there, and as I look at, you know, some of his previous work, one of the things that Jordan Peterson talks a lot about, and I think this is something that we do need to look at, is the epidemic of young men, and particularly in my generation, our generation, who grew up with single mothers, right? And single mothers were addressing absent fathers, men that were not showing up, men that were showing up in destructive ways, and seeking to create good boys. And I think that quote really refers to this idea of creating good boys. And we need to get rid of that idea and that notion of the good boy, right? Because a good boy does not become a good man, right? What we're really talking about is taking away all of those qualities that single mothers were seeing as negative qualities in the masculine, right? And so absolutely, that, you know, the pendulum swings one way and the pendulum swings back the other way. And I think that, in to a certain degree, that's what he's trying to address in saying that. Now, I'll take it one step further and say there is no such thing as good, bad. Really, the question that we should be asking ourselves is what makes an effective man, right? Good or bad is just a judgment. And I am here in my work not to judge any other man for the choices that he makes, but to simply call him forward to make his own choices and to be his own man. And in making those decisions and those choices, I can only tell you whether those choices are effective or ineffective based on whether or not he knows what he wants out of his life. And fundamentally, I think that's the big issue, is that we as men often don't know what we want out of life. We've conditioned in this culture that tells us to climb this ladder to success, and then we get up to the top of the ladder and we look and we're like, what the fuck's going on around here? There's nothing here. What is this? This isn't happiness. This isn't anything. And so I've done all the things that I was told to be a good boy and then to be a good man, and then I get to the top of it and it's empty. It's not fulfilling. And I think that's really the more essential question, is fuck what it means to be good. What does it mean to be effective in the life that I am seeking to create for myself? Now, to go back to it, you know, I think that the question of harm or harmlessness really also gets at the core of this issue. I like to look at is we have systematically as a culture looked at apex predators as something to be feared, right? We look at, we've killed off the wolves, we've killed off the sharks, we've killed off all the apex predators in nature as an animal. We fear those. We forget that we are at the top of the food chain. And so overall, we look at men in that same way. We look at our apex predators, our alpha, and I think that term gets overused and misused too often. But we look at that quality of manhood as something that is to be feared and something that needs to be shoved over into the corner. And I think that also in that quote, he's trying to get at the notion that, you know, we don't need to fear that. We need to hone that with inside of ourselves. Know that I have that power, because when I understand the true essence of my own power, I don't need to project it out in a way that's harmful to others. I think that's really the core issue there.
Yeah, that's such a good, thorough answer. I absolutely love that answer, and it brings up a lot. And one of the things I think we do know about Jordan Peterson is oftentimes you got to give him the benefit of the doubt and really look at some of what he is really saying. Another aspect of that is, obviously, if you think about projecting good in the world and keeping, you know, the quote, you know, evil aspects of ourselves in check, when there is a good, dangerous man standing in the way, it oftentimes deters the bad, you know, sort of a harmless man. And so I do think I understand that from him as well. And then my take would be that really, in the end, it's about our choices and our actions that define who we are. And so in the end, whether the person is, you know, a badass at jiu-jitsu or a mixed martial artist, or whether he's just an artist and has no real physical strength or whatever it is, one of the things that I would say that we do, and I think this speaks to sort of the cultural conditioning that you were alluding to, is that we essentially say, well, you know what, if you don't have a skill that measures up in our society, mm-hmm. and you don't have physical prowess as a man, you know, then you're not a good man. And to me, I would say, no, you can be a good man. Your choices and actions define you. Whether you are harmless or dangerous or not has nothing really to do with it. But I do think, you know, that Jordan is getting at something a little deeper than that. But I would put it that way. And then here's kind of where I want to go with this, because you brought up a very important piece of this, which I would call culture level conditioning, mm-hmm. right? This idea is kind of what you were alluding to. And I remember I studied with James Hollis. I don't know if you know who James Hollis is, but he's one of the last Jungian psychologists mm-hmm. around, and he does mainly males work. Mm-hmm. And anyway, it was a bunch of men here, and he stood up in front of the room and he goes, you know, this is different because I'm normally giving lectures to women who want to know about men. He goes, and let me tell you, man, what I oftentimes tell women when they ask me what it's like to be a man. And he basically said, imagine that you're playing a game that you do not know the rules to, that you must win, and it's a zero-sum game, and you really are just sort of thrown into this arena. He goes, that's what it's like today for a lot of men. They are culturally conditioned to follow these particular paths. But like you say, when they get to whatever they are supposed to get to, what culture said, this is now you're a man, or now you should be, you know, successful. The culture might be saying that they're successful, but they don't tend to feel fulfilled. It's not a guarantee. And so you brought up a really important point that I want to get into, which is this idea of like, it's really about what you decide and choose as a man, and correct me if I'm phrasing this wrong, but it sounded like what you were saying is it's really about what a man decides that they want to be and what they want to make their life mean. So it's almost like a self-constructed honor code, in a sense, that men must look at and say, who is it that I want to be? And I'm curious, how do we begin that conversation with men, especially young men, and what's the process?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a lifelong process, you know? And I think, you know, we talk a lot in men's work about the lack of initiation for men. And this word initiation really comes at its core about our journey through life and a journey from birth to death. And about halfway through that journey, and it doesn't halfway in terms of our age, but halfway in terms of the skills that we need to create, we're going to enter into a phase where we're essentially going into the darkest cave of our life, really confronting myself and confronting all of the things that have happened in the lower half of that journey. We think about that journey as just being a circle, right? I start here to the east, and I end back at the east, where my birth and my death. And over here in the west, I see this space of confronting. And this is where essentially in Western culture, it's our teenage years. And this is our time for initiation. Where we are really confronted with my own shadows. And these shadows are actually my gifts. All the shit that's happened to me in my life, all the ways that I've fallen down, all of the circumstances that have happened to me. Carolyn Mays has this great story where she talks about, you know, each of us come with in our soul this seed of a gift, you know. And you know, I'm sitting up in this room, and I'm, you know, in the perfect world, heaven, whatever you want to call it, you know. And I say, okay, I'm going to go down to this life, and I'm going to come in for health and wellness. That's what I want to bring to this world. I'm bring health and wellness. And Carolyn May says, okay. So God looks over and says, all right, I need two people to be your parents. Two people raising. All right, I'll be the parent. And he goes, okay, you're going to put them on the couch, feed them Cheetos, and make them watch bad television all day, right? Because it's through these obstacles in our lives that we're forced to confront who we truly are. What is the unique essence of me, Kelly? What is the unique essence of you, Jade? You know, and it's not just all of the skills. Oh, I came in with some strong muscles, right? Actually, it may be that I came in with inability to lift a weight, right? And that conflict and that confrontation is what honed who I am, right? And in this period, you know, indigenous cultures, we send people out into nature. We send them out into the woods and we say, go find yourself, you know, go on your spirit quest, go on your journey. I've been involved in Vision Quest ceremony where, you know, you go and you starve yourself for a series of days to really ask myself at my core, who am I? To look out to this world and ask, you know, the flora and the fauna, what am I all about? And I come back to elders and those elders ask me questions and they say, what did you find on that journey? Who are you? And in that I go, okay, I now have marching orders for my life. I have a sense of what it is for me, my unique life. Now, I believe that each and every one of us knows that we're supposed to go on that journey, but we don't have any systems in our societies to support that journey. So what do? We join gangs, we join fraternities, we join biker groups, we join all kinds of different places where I can belong. I have a group of elders, quote unquote, who are going to help me find my way. But these are just big boys who have never really become truly initiated men, trying to lead other boys on a journey to someplace they don't know where to go.
100%.
You know?
Yeah, 100%. You know, it's interesting. This is this reminds me of the work of Plotkin, right?
Which, yep.
So
I've done some work with Plotkin
as
well. Yeah,
so that's a really interesting way of looking at this. And I would say one of the things that's really interesting about that, and let me paraphrase this and just say, you can tell me, yeah, JD got it, or no, you don't. But I kind of see it like this as you were talking. I was like, okay, so Kelly is unique. Jade is unique. And the way I phrase it would be, you know, there's never actually been anyone like Kelly in the history of humanity, nor will there ever be. Same for Jade, same for every other man. To me, this is the first realization and one thing you're hinting at, to essentially say, I am unique. Now, if I then go, I'm just going to let the culture define me, I'm forgetting about my uniqueness. And one of the things you said in there that's really interesting is that part of that uniqueness as a man, as a human, is these struggles, mm-hmm. right? So the things that you come in with that are difficult for you, maybe the genetic stuff, maybe the you know, the early conditionings, the traumas that we've had. Mm-hmm. And the big one, I feel like, is the traumas, right? Because men don't do very well, it seems. You know, and we kind of get this as a bad rap. I think it is actually accurate, but I want to see if you are. But the knock on men would be that they don't necessarily deal with their wounds well. So it sounds like what you're saying is, okay, so here we are, these unique entities. We come into the world, we have these unique traumas and things like that. And this is part of the first step or stage of initiation of defining who I am and how I will use these tools, let's call them, these things that I have been given to construct something. And this is the part that's tough. And I guess I'll ask you this, because you can construct two things from this, right? You can go, I'm going to construct something for myself and only myself, which I would refer to more as the base level sort of mindset. It's just me, me, me. I can construct something just for my group, right? But forget all the other groups. Mm-hmm. I would call that the culture level self. It's sort of like, you know, if I'm a Democrat, then I'm going to hate all Republicans and vice versa. Mm-hmm. Versus I can create something for myself that also benefits the world. Mm-hmm. And from my perspective, this is where I feel like most fulfillment would come from for a man. But I want to see, A, do I have that right from your perspective? Are you know, is it sort of like you're like, what did I miss there? And then B, if this is the case, how do we release this attachment from our base level, just protect myself, my culture level, just be about my team, where we become the hero that basically takes it on the chin for society and takes care of ourselves and others? How can we manage that? Because it's a pretty scary place to be as a man, because it's sort of like, well, who's going to take care of me? And I can understand that, but I feel like listening to you talk, that's ultimately where we're trying to get to, perhaps. But what are your thoughts about that? Did I miss anything there, or and how would you say it?
No, I think you pretty much nailed it. You know, there's some really beautiful things you said in there. You know, one of the things, you know, I picked up on is that notion of hero, and we as a society, Bill Plotkins talks about the idea that we are a patho-adolescent society. Overall, we are living in an overall adolescence of our cultural development, right? And the hero is the adolescent version of the warrior, right? The hero goes out and wins at all costs, right? The warrior goes, there's a cost to this choice that I'm making, right? And we have idolized that version, right? That version that is, when we talk about that cultural level of mine or yours or individual level, really a lot of that is rooted in fear. Right, the fear, and that this comes back to Yuval Noah Harari has, in Sapiens talks a lot about how in quickly rising to the top of this food chain, we didn't have the time to realize what a majestic beast that we are. Like the lion isn't really concerned about the mouse, right? But we are still, as animals, afraid of all the things that are out there in the darkness, and that fear drives these decisions to attack. I'm attacking out of fear. Without understanding that I don't need to project out my dominance in order to hold my dominance. And that we see that in so many levels of individual and society, negative behaviors by men, whatever, by all people, right? We're projecting out my own fears as a sense of protection. And this comes to the cultural level of what it means to be a man. All of the things that I've been told, boys don't cry, man up, all of these notions that to be a man means that I've got to put the burdens of life on my shoulders, carry them all by myself, never complain, and hold it until it breaks me, right? We've idolized these adolescent versions of masculinity, where ultimately true masculinity is accepting my unique role in this world. And when I get to the core of that role, if it doesn't equal service, I haven't got to the core of it.
Ah, so good.
Fundamentally.
I want to jump in real quick and tell you about one of my favorite new products. And to start out, I want to ask you a question. If you had to follow your friends around who are not the healthiest in the world and see what they are doing, what would be the number one thing you would probably tell them to do to start? For most people, that's going to be drinking more water, right? This is something that we talk about all the time in health and fitness. It's almost as if we think of it as an afterthought now, because obviously water is so crucial. However, we oftentimes get this wrong. For example, did you know that when it comes to hydration, just drinking water can make things worse? Most people don't know this. Why? Partly because most people are over drinking water and under consuming the electrolytes that help water do its job. What we don't realize is that hydration is not just about water. It's about electrolytes, the minerals in there, as well as getting that water into the cells. And so you do not want to be over consuming water if you're not getting your electrolytes right. And this opens up a whole new discussion, because most people are not getting their electrolytes right. For example, did you know that too low sodium is an issue, just as much, if not more so, than high sodium? In other words, what we want, if we're going to get the right electrolytes, is to get the right amount of sodium and potassium and magnesium in the Goldilocks zone. We don't want too much. We don't want too little. We want it just right. This opens up a whole other thing here too, because people who are exercising, doing sauna therapies, doing low carb diets are disrupting and losing lots and lots of their electrolytes. For example, when insulin is not around in low carb diets, you will excrete lots of sodium. In other words, under that state, exercising, low carb diets, all these things, you actually need more sodium. And so if you're somebody who has been just drinking water, not paying attention to electrolytes, and also feeling fatigued, feeling like you're underperforming, not sleeping right, getting cramps, twitches, headaches, any of these things, then you are probably dealing with an electrolyte issue. This is where the product Element comes in. This product has been a game changer for me and many, many of my patients and clients. This is a rehydration electrolyte beverage, basically. It is a powder of electrolytes formulated with 1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, and 60 milligrams magnesium without the added sugar and other nonsense that comes in beverages like Gatorade. This stuff is basically a rehydration beverage on steroids. It is the thing that is going to replenish your electrolytes in the right ratios, decrease fatigue, really correct chronic dehydration. And by the way, many people are dehydrating themselves, becoming hyponatremic, low sodium, when they're consuming too much water. You need your electrolytes on board, especially if you are someone who is losing lots of sodium and other electrolytes through low-carb diets and lots of exercise. This is where Element comes in. Element is a new sponsor to the Next Level Human podcast. I cannot recommend this product enough. I have been using this stuff for months now, and I have immediately seen changes in my energy levels. I feel like I'm operating on a whole other level, and I have seen this as being the primary thing that people who have been using Element have been telling me, that their fatigue is getting better, especially fatigue that comes after very intense workouts that involve lots of sweating and lots of intense output from the nervous system. Please check out Element. Use the code NEXTLEVEL. DrinkElement.com. That's DrinkElement.com. DrinkElement.com, and let's get back to the show.
Yeah, that's so good. So that's the first time, because what's really interesting, our mutual friend introduced me to Plotkin, because she was like, your work, have you read Plotkin? And I was like, no. She goes, well, your Next Level Human stuff is really in alignment with him, because I talk a lot about the child being the base level state.
Yep.
Children are, of course, necessarily, the world revolves around them. Mm-hmm. I talk about the culture level being the adolescent, and I think that's what she was like, oh, you got to read Plotkin. Mm-hmm. So then I read Plotkin and was like, oh, this really does sort of resonate with me. But I didn't necessarily finish all of Plotkin. Mm-hmm. And you just gave me an insight here that is really sort of beautiful about the hero. It sounds like what you're saying is the hero plus wisdom and experience equals the warrior. And that transition is where we move into sort of this service state. And would you say, based on that, one of the things that I would say, and I'll just throw this model at you and just see what you want to do with it, but to me, the base level person, I oftentimes talk about the base level human, is someone who is, their major emotional driver is fear. And the way they deal with that is they seek for power. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is if they can become all powerful, there's nothing left to fear. But the problem with chasing power is ultimately destructive around the whole world. Sooner or later, there's nothing left to be powerful over, and you lose yourself, because in the end, we aren't a hierarchy in my mind, the way Jordan Peterson would say, but we're more of an ecosystem. So if you kill the beavers and the bees, and you're the lion, you're not going to survive very long. And I feel like that's the mistake that a lot of men will do. They just attack. And to me, I oftentimes think when I see a male going into a school and shooting up the place, which you don't see women doing this, at least we haven't yet, I oftentimes think of that this is someone who is trying to exercise power over fear. Now, they might not be conscious of that fear.
Of course not.
Now, with the culture level, I oftentimes see, okay, so now they're chasing popularity, right? They're chasing belonging. The primary emotional driver is acceptance and belonging. Now they chase popularity. The problem is, right from the start there, if you're chasing popularity, you're not being the authentic self that you were explaining that we need to be as men. And so you lose yourself there as well. So both this base level chasing power is destructive, and this culture level chasing popularity is destructive. And so our only choice then, based on that logic, and it sounds like you're saying the exact same thing, but correct me if I'm wrong here, is that what we must do is we must move into this next level state where we simultaneously serve ourself and other. And that's a tight, difficult rope to sort of walk. And I like this idea of the warrior being that thing. And is, and are you calling it that? Does Plotkin call it that because the warrior fights for the tribe and himself?
Yeah, so let me clarify. When I'm talking about that, I'm talking about the four key archetypes of masculinity. Okay, and this comes from a book called King, Lover, Magician, Warrior by Robert Gillet, and I'm forgetting the other person's name, but you should be able to find it through that for the listeners. But, you know, that's one of the core elements of the mythopoetic men's movement. You know, if you look at Mankind Project, which I'm a member of, as many other groups, it's kind of a great place for men to get started with men's work. The mythopoetic men's movement was looking at these four key archetypes: the king, the lover, the magician, and the warrior. Now, in my work, I plot those to Plotkin's cardinal directions and understanding those to of how are we development do we develop. So the lover is to the east, where the sun rises, where I understand how to connect with life itself. The warrior is to the south. We also plot this to the east is the spring, the south is the summer. The warrior in its fulfillment is concerned about protecting itself and its tribe, but also connecting to its wild nature. To the west, we see the magician. It's our ability to transform life and to look into the magic and the mystery that is available all around us. And ultimately, the king to the north is our wisdom. It's our understanding. It's the winter. It's our celebration of all that we have come to understand. So I kind of put those two together.
I love that. There's an integration there then, huh? So the idea then would be to integrate your lover, your warrior, your magician, and your king.
Exactly. And the fullness of masculinity, the integrated man, is ultimately able to harness each of those mythological powers within themselves to find themselves in fullness. If I'm weak in one area and strong in another, that just gives me an opportunity to grow this area. And oftentimes, this imbalance is where we see so much of violence happening. Now, going back to this idea of power, as a culture, typically we see power over as the only sort of power that there is, right? And I like to refer to it as not just power over, but power with. How do I create power within a group? And ultimately, this is what the true essence of an alpha male is. You know, the scientists who did the research on apes primarily was looking at how a leader created leadership within the group. And he wasn't the strongest or the biggest or the toughest. He was the one that was able to make the most collaborations within the group to create unity within the group. And that's truly what an alpha is. So power with is far more important than power over. Power over ultimately leads to my own destruction. But also there's power within. What is my connection to a sense of awe about the universe that I know is with inside of me and not outside of me? You know, in all of the religions that I've studied and all of the spirituality that I've studied, and I've traveled all over the globe looking into what's the one central truth in all of these ideas, because these stories, you know, as Joseph Campbell would say, right? There's truth with a capital T. When I look at all of these different societies that could not have any connection with each other, and yet they're saying the same thing, there's some big T truth in that. And the big T truth that I get from all of these ideas is that in my core, there is something that connects me to all of life. I am not separate from, but I am a part of all. Yes. And that is the ultimate power. And so my journey through this life is coming back to the remembrance of I am part of everything. I am not apart from everything. And so in me seeking to have power, if my only way of having power is to take power from you, I am creating an inequality that is unsustainable.
Yeah.
How do I seek to create a connection, an understanding of the power that I have within all the life that is in itself, to be truly myself and unlock my piece of the puzzle? You know, my big issue right now is our education system. It's one of the big things that I've been working in education. I was a dean of students of a university. I retired from that. I no longer believe in our traditional education systems to bring human beings to where they need to go. And what we're doing is we're hijacking these systems where we know that in our deepest part of our soul, there's something that I'm looking for. And we commoditize that in sending people to colleges and universities that aren't helping them to understand who they uniquely are and what their piece of the puzzle is, but instead directing them towards a industry and a job. And ultimately, you know, the education system was designed to create factory workers,
yeah,
you know?
100%.
And so if we can hone in on that piece of what is your uniqueness, then your piece of the puzzle is going to contribute to all of life. It's going to be different than my piece of the puzzle. It's going to be different than every other piece of the puzzle. But if we can hone that piece, now we're starting to create an interconnectedness, a web of true power, of true ability to create the world that we all want to live in.
Yeah, I love that. And here's a way, I'll put it this way and see if this is what you were saying. Correct me if this doesn't get to it. But it's really interesting from the perspective of And I love this caution. I feel like that you're giving us is like power in itself. It's what you're doing with the power, right? So in a sense, power in the service of purpose yes. is a good power. Popularity in the service of purpose is a good thing to have. Mm-hmm. And the way I would define purpose is simply the humble recognition that I, Jade, or you, Kelly, have something unique and positive to contribute to the world that only you can bring.
Yep.
And so if I can develop my power and use it in service of my purpose,
yep.
and I can develop a level of popularity and use it in service of purpose, then this is the healthy way to integrate this. It sounds like in your model, this is the power with, so I'm collaborating with people and also understanding the power within rather than the power over. I love the way you define that. It's something that this is why I love these conversations, right? Because you learn that's a really cool way to look at it. Let's get into, if you agree with that, one of the things that I would love to just sort of pick your brain about is, let's say now we've got a man, many men, you and I know this, we've worked with them. I've been through it myself. You know, I've been through my own sort of male awakening and midlife awakening, and, you know, trying to come to terms with the mistakes that I've made and the dysfunctions that I have. Let's say we have this man, right, that you and I probably have been through our own stuff and still have our own struggles, you know, sort of a never-ending battle. But we have plenty of people who have not even started on the path and are sitting in a place of, I don't know what I'm doing here. I feel trapped in this relationship, in this job, in this world, and I just feel like I have sort of no control. From my perspective, where do we start with this? And I'll give you a few thoughts just to get you started thinking about this and get the listener started thinking about this. So from my perspective, we have to start, and it sounds like you've already kind of said this, but we have to start with this recognition of, what am I all about? So obviously, if we've never had the initiation that you speak about, we've never gone out and done this journey, we may not be able to even tap into that or be aware of that. But one of the things I think also we have to do is overcome this culture level idea that if I'm not doing a job, and nowadays if I don't have the social media following and I'm not doing something that people necessarily see as worthy, that my job always has to be my purpose. And from my perspective, I oftentimes go, well, our job is simply there to finance our purpose. And we have to look at it like that. Like some people, you just make a choice. I'll give you an example here because I know you're a father. I'm not. But my father's purpose was father. Now, a lot of people go, I don't get that. Now, the way I look at it is like, he's not father. His purpose isn't father because I'm his son and he has three other children. His purpose was father, and he chose that because he became a father figure to the world. Mm-hmm. He coached. He volunteered. He is a father to adults. You know, I remember my adult friend went bankrupt, and he said, you're going to stay with me. Mm-hmm. And this was a person who was not very literate, so he helped him, you know, learn how to write a checkbook, manage his. This is a grown man that my dad did this for. So he basically, now, his job was as a, you know, someone he was a computer programmer. Mm-hmm. His purpose was father. And so from my perspective, I want to ask you, the expert in this and working with men, how do you start with this then to get people to go, it's not about, you know, sort of this culture level job you're doing. It's how you're being perhaps everywhere else. And if I'm getting that right, I would love to hear your process of how this begins to work, especially with a man who's never gone through any initiation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the number one piece for me is community. It really comes back to finding myself in a community that supports me to be authentically who I am. Most of us have never had that. I never really truly had that until I was, in my late 30s. And it was really that stepping into my first men's group that created the space for me to really be more authentic about who I was. And to realize, you know, at a deep level, so many other men were going through the same things that I was going through. And what's one of the very first things that I do when I cast a circle of men together is I start with vulnerability, giving us a space to just be real and authentic about shame. Because the most difficult thing, we are all walking around with a ton of shame. And it is the lowest vibrational energy in the universe, and it is holding us down. And that shame I am constantly trying to project out of in so many different ways. And so when I get in a group of other men and I say, hey, look, I've done this, I've done that, I've done this, and other men can go, man, I've never said that to anybody else. I've also done that. I've also held shame about my penis. I've also held shame about sexual assault. I've also held shame about, and man, you'd be surprised the level which we're going through, how much we are carrying, I am carrying as a man, that I have been carrying all by myself. I have a good friend, Preston Smiles, who says over and over, it's not the weight of the load that breaks us down, but how we carry it. Yeah. So the very first thing that I want to say to men is find community, and not just guys that I can go out and drink a beer with and talk about the game with and talk about all of the super level, superficial level stuff with, but other men that I can get real with who have had similar experiences, and I can realize that I'm not alone. And I think that that's one of the very first things that I want to say to men.
That's a huge one, right? Because we, as men, oftentimes feel deeply alone.
Absolutely.
And perpetuate it.
Yeah, and perpetuate it. You know, culturally, I'm taught that to be a man means I do it on my own. Mm. Right? And there's so many areas I still try to do it all on my own. It's so deep inside of me. You know, that's why I said I have a men's group, you know, and each of the men in this group are men that hold huge communities of other men and other people, you know, relationship coaches, actors, artists, men's group facilitators. They're all great men. And what we came together to realize is that what we all share in common is that we have an absence of fatherhood in our lives. And so what we created was a space where we could be fathers to each other. What does that really mean to be a father? You know, as you spoke about that, it means to hold a certain responsibility for life. I think that's at its core. I hold responsibility for life, not just my life, but also for all of life. And it doesn't mean that I have had a child to be a father. I love how you say that. I think getting back to it is, that's where it starts. But also as we hold each other and allow each other to be authentic, and to the core piece of a men's group is that I'm not here to tell you how to be a man. I'm simply here to support you in making your choices about the kind of man that you want to be. And I'm using this term man broadly. I can, one of the core pieces of being in a men's group is I can only speak from my experience. I can't speak for your experience. And so I speak about men's work because I'm a man, and that's my set of experiences. But I think this applies universally. I'm not saying that women don't have all of these challenges and it's not, certainly not, I don't even look at world as binary. There are many different versions of sex and sexuality and all of that, right? But to say that I seek to have this, and I say, okay, that's what you're seeking. Now, what choices are you making around that thing that you say that you want? What choices are you making around the things that you say that you want, and are they effective? If they're not effective, do we want to look at making different choices. And one of the big pieces that I want to finish every group with is really connecting them to purpose. And this is a tricky one, right? Because, you know, it seems like this such a big thing. Like, I've got this purpose. Oh my God, that's so heavy. What if I decide on the wrong purpose? You know, what if I decide on the wrong thing? Well, you can't. And I like to equate it to the mountaintop, right? You know, if I'm an explorer out here in the world, you know, I say, okay, which direction am I going to go? That mountain over there looks really exciting. I am going to make it my purpose to get to the top of that mountain. Okay? Now, that just giving myself that purpose gives me marching orders to start moving in a direction. I have a good friend who talks about her GPS system, right? You know, you get in your car and your GPS, it never knows where you're going until you start moving.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't know which way I'm going, but suddenly when you start moving, the GPS can re-coordinate and figure it out and like, oh, okay, now I know where I'm going. So I say, that's my mountaintop and I'm going to call that my purpose. That's my big, big thing, right? Now, as I start moving towards that, I'm going to go, oh, wait a second. Now that I've cleared these trees, I see this mountaintop over there is actually the mountaintop that I want to go to. And as I continue to move, I will continue to clarify and hone what that thing is for me. Ultimately, the reason we do purpose work is to bring myself, okay, this is my big 10-year goal. This is my purpose. This is in 10 years, I'm going to do this to help fulfill that purpose. Mm. Now, you know, 5 years ago, I set out a goal to qualify for the Ironman World Championships. I was sitting on my couch. I had a corner office job. I had back problems. I wasn't getting any exercise, you know, and how was I going to solve this? I'm going to go to Kona. You know, the hardest challenge that a human being can do, right?
No kidding.
I'll give myself 10 years to get to Kona, right? Now I'm 5 years into that journey. And I said to myself the other day, I was like, you know, what's the half Ironman championship? That might be the one that I'm going for, right? Yeah. And that might more align with the world that I'm actually living in. Now, I say that's my big 10-year goal. Right now, I walk that back. Okay, if I was going to get there in 10 years, where would I get in 5 years? Where would I get in 1 year? Now, the only thing that really matters about any of this is what am I going to do in the next 3 months? What am I going
to? The fact that you're moving.
I'm moving. Mm. And in this next 3 months, what am I going to do? And if I take those 3 months, then I can look at each week, each day, each hour. What am I going to commit to doing that is going to help get me moving towards that thing? And as I continue to move, purpose will become more and more clarified.
Yes.
Now, when I'm in community, when I have people that hold me to my highest, and I define community as the people that hold me to the life that I say that I want for myself. You know, when we get married, I tell this to people who are getting married, you know, I'm not going up there, you know, so that what I'm going up there, the ceremony is supposed to be about going up there and looking in front of all these people and saying, hey, all of you, I'm asking you to hold me to these commitments that I'm making right now. These are the commitments as I stand up here and I say, this is what I am committed to. And I'm asking you to remind me when I said that I was going to do this, that this is my commitment. That's what community, that's what men's work is all about. I'm not here to tell you who you are. I'm here to ask you who you are, ask you what you're committed to, and continually over and over hold you to the commitment of who you say you are.
I'm sorry to break into the show, but I wanted to take a second to cover one of our sponsors and tell you all about Paleo Valley at paleovalley.com. These are the grass-fed sticks that I tell you all so much about that all of my friends know I have on hand constantly. They are in my car. They are at my house. I keep them at my sister's home and my parents' house. I have these things everywhere because they are the simplest, most convenient whole foods protein supplement you can get, almost like carrying around pure protein, low carb protein in your pocket. They also, these Paleo Valley beef sticks are the only 100% grass fed and grass finished beef sticks on the market. They use organic spices. They are naturally fermented instead of using nitrates and nitrites that can be a problem in some of these cured meats. And they simply taste fantastic. Check out the original or the jalapeno. Those are my favorites. Please make sure you go over to paleovalley.com and visit. When checking out, use the code NEXT level for a 15% discount. Remember, our sponsors keep the show going by you giving them your patronage and spending your money on these high quality products. You actually do a few things. One, you're helping to support the podcast. And two, you are helping your health. And three, you are making sure that good quality companies like Paleo Valley can be out there doing their business, changing the world, making the earth better. One of the things you may not know about this is that grass-fed organic and grass-finished beef is doing something that is so utterly important for our environment, actually helping to repopulate the topsoil. A lot of people don't know this, but our topsoil is being extremely depleted, and raising animals, especially cattle, the correct way helps to get that topsoil back. This is one of the reasons why I love Paleo Valley, not to mention it tastes fantastic, but they're one of these companies, like my other sponsors, Cured Nutrition and Organifi, that are doing the right things by the environment. I really appreciate everything they do, and I hope you will check them out. Thanks so much. PaleoValley.com. Use the code NEXTLEVEL. And now back to the show.
Yeah, I mean, it's so apparent to me why our friends wanted you and I to connect, because to me, this is the critical aspect here. And I just want to share a couple thoughts I have with this and see, just for the listener, one, to, you know, kind of reiterate what you said and make sure I've got it. So correct me if I don't have it. And then a couple other things that I think might be important along this path, and just want to get your thoughts on it. So to me, that's the way I've always seen purpose as well. It's sort of like this idea that you start to move in a direction, and the obstacles, the challenges, the pain, the lessons sort of wind you around to get more clear. Like, how many of us have the same purpose? You know, like when I was 15, I watched Top Gun and wanted to be a fighter pilot. You know, I wanted to be in the NFL at one point, right? But the anchor in what I was doing, there were always keys to healer, teacher, were sort of like the underlying themes of what I was doing. And the more I took action in the world in all these different ways, healer, teacher, healer, teacher, healer, teacher started to emerge. And I could make a choice there, which of these two big mountains did I want to go to? And it sounds like the same thing that you were saying with this Ironman. It's not about, it's basically I'm moving in this direction and I'm seeing that something is going to become enlightened for me along that path. The other thing that's really interesting is this idea of the marriage ceremony. To me, I see it as an honor code, and it's also something that I feel like we should have this honor code for ourselves first, that we should have, and I do think this is maybe what the initiation is all about. So, you know, when Kelly was talking to all of us about, you know, the hero goes out on this initiation and they come back and the elders are like, what did you learn? I think that's really what they're prodding is, what is your honor code? Mm-hmm. Like, what are you essentially defining is going to be your thing? When I went through, I had an affair, I had a divorce, I went through what I would call a betrayal sandwich. Most people who listen to this podcast know this. This is the first time you and I have talked about it. But one of the things that came out of that was, wow, I have a very tenuous, a dysfunctional relationship to honesty. Mm-hmm. That then became part of my honor code. And I basically said, I will be the most honest person that I know. I will live through kindness, generosity, honesty. I created this honor code around this. And then I was very open and upfront about it with friends and family in the way that I was essentially marrying myself to this honor code in the way you put it. And then there's one final aspect to this that I want to just get your thought on, because as we're moving right through this purpose, we're moving in a direction and we're discovering this purpose as we go along. One of the things that happens is our environment and the people around us, especially the people that are the closest to us, our romantic partners, really, which in a sense act as, you know, part parent, part lover, part best friend. These, they take on a lot of this. And so we run into these issues with people. And to me, this is where the one part that I think can be beneficial, and I do think, you know, this is something maybe we don't talk much about, is this idea that along with this honor code, not only do we have these sort of things like kindness, generosity, or whatever the man that we want to be, those are sort of our anchors and lighthouses as life gets really rough. But then there needs to be some kind of roadblock or some kind of traffic signal or something that essentially says, this is the wrong direction. And I think this is where standards and boundaries come in. This is where at times you have to be like, no, I will not tolerate this. And these are some very difficult things. And as a final to this conversation, I just want to kind of get your sense of how do we, one, how do you see this, us developing this honor code? It sounds like in community, you're already saying you essentially declare this to your community. A group of men is how, you know, you're doing this. And then, to me, what do we do about this idea that people will, not necessarily always in a malicious way, but we're going to be running into base level, culture level people all the time. There's this quote by Marcus Aurelius where he basically says, today I'm going to encounter murderers, thieves, the least unkind people in the world, and the best revenge is sort of not to be that way. And basically, we have to put up some kind of boundaries to say what we will and will not tolerate to keep us on our path. And I want to get your sense about that, because I think this is where people, if they're struggling, they might be like, oh my God, I really love what Kelly and Jade are talking about. They're talking about this idea that I can basically go out here, start to follow this path towards purpose. It will become illuminated. But how do I deal with this fact that my life looks like this now, and then I'm always going to encounter these people who want me to be who they want me to be, not who I am, you know, intent on becoming.
Yeah, thank you. That's all so well said. You know, I have a process that I walk men through to getting to purpose, and it starts with values. What are my values in the world? And as a filmmaker, I'm intimately acquainted with the idea that we express values through stories. One of the things that is the easiest way to look at this for the listeners, if you're trying to figure out, well, what are my core values? Every film is an expression of a core value. So when I say, you know, Top Gun is one of my favorite movies, right? Whatever is, whatever it may be. What is that film? What is the value that that film is expressing? It speaks to that story that speaks to me is speaking to a value that really resonates with who I am or who I seek to be. So first of all, I look at my values. What are those core values? Now, my honor code is an expression of how I seek to uphold that value in the world. That's my honor code, right? I say, you know, a value is commitment, right? I see commitment as, being there for other people. I'm just making this up, right? So my honor code is, as a man, I stand for showing up fully for the people that I love the most in my life, right? And this is how I create my own unique honor code. Nobody else gets to tell me what it is. It's for me to look inside and discover what that is, right? And that honor code is ultimately what starts to add up to the marching orders for who I seek to be. Now, if I have a clear honor code, just like I make, you know, when I'm up in that ceremony of marriage, I make my vows. Right? I make a clear commitment to who I say I'm going to be so that everybody can hear that and they can say, hey, you remember you said that, right? Not many people actually do, you know, but the ones that are our truest, deepest friends, they're the ones that come back and remind me and say, hey, you know, you said you were going to do this, you know, and they're not afraid to hold me to that. You know, too often we don't, you know, we just let people slide. You know, we let people say, no, not show up in the way that they want to be. And so, you know, to me, those are the key pieces. I develop what are my unique values, what is my honor code, who do I say I want to be, and who are the people that I'm going to entrust with holding me to that, and they're going to entrust me to holding them to who they say they want to be.
Yeah.
I think, you know, at the most fundamental level, you know, that's where we're going at it. I feel like I missed something in that question there.
Yeah, and I think you reiterated it perfectly. And then I to the question of boundaries, it's almost like this. And I think this is sort of what is core to what you're saying. There's these people who you're saying you have to entrust. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I was thinking with that, I was like, oh, this is what I think we have to remember with boundaries. To me, I have this rule. Never, ever invest my time in someone who insists on seeing me a way I am not or no longer wish to be. And to me, that's the core concept of boundary, which essentially you're saying. So you have these group of people that you go, I'm entrusting you to hold me to this standard. So that's the standard part. And then if you don't, I will not include you in this, and you are going to have to sort of be over here. I refuse to engage with someone who's going to see me a way I'm not or no longer wish to be. And we see this all the time, especially in romantic relationships, where it's like, you know, we project all of our old partners onto somebody, and you find yourself in this place. So it's very difficult to be the thing when your environment insists you're not the thing. And that's where I think the boundaries come in. And I think you answered it perfectly, because you solve the problem, it sounds like, by essentially saying it really comes down to not just having boundaries on what you won't tolerate, but the fact that you have entrusted standards with a group of people who will see you the way you want. It's almost like this: the best friends that I have are the ones who, every time I'm ready to make a change and up level, they're like, hell yeah, dude, I'm ready for that. I'm going to be here for you on that journey. Let's go. They're, my dreams become their dreams. And then there's the type that go, I don't know if I like that. And a lot of this is family, friends, because they see Kelly and they see Jade as Kelly and Jade that they know. And me and you changing that can, for a more, someone who's more base level and culture level oriented, which, by the way, we all have base level, culture level, and next level aspects of ourselves, but those people, that becomes fearful for them, and they will resist that. And then we have got to have this other family, it sounds like. So I think you answered it perfectly, if I'm getting that right. Your answer was essentially, we need to entrust these standards to other people. And implicit in that is, we also will not tolerate someone who does not see our next level self. So I'll let you kind of give your final thoughts on this, because to me, this is an incredible conversation, and it kind of gets the ball rolling. I hope you'll want to do this again, because this is just, I think, touching the surface of your sort of genius in this space. But I do think it's a really good introduction to this. But what final thoughts would you give men who are sort of like, I really am digging this conversation, how Jade and Kelly are coming at this, and I want to know a little bit more, or what are the sort of steps for them to begin, you know, sort of the process?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think there's one last thing. You nailed it with that word projections, you know, and that boundary that I create are the projections that other people want to place on me, my family, my friends. It's not a reflection of how they see me, but how they're seeing themselves as a reflection of myself. It's the things that bother me most about myself that bother me the most about other people. And on a society level, I think that is the core root of everything that is holding us back. We've created this notion that there are villains out there, right? And from a storytelling component, right, we create every protagonist. The antagonist is really just the reflection of themselves. But in order for you to understand the story, we've created an antagonist that lives outside of themselves. And somewhere along the lines, we started taking that metaphor as a literal truth, that the villain is somebody outside of me. But the thing that I'm looking at somebody else, and this is the one truth that I want the listeners to understand, is that thing that you're looking at somebody, you're pointing your finger at, you're saying that person is wrong, that person doesn't, what are they reflecting that is a reflection of who you don't want to be, who you have been, who you are afraid of being? From that place, I can find deeper compassion. I may not have them in my life, but I can find a compassion for who they are and the journey that they're going on, and I don't need to make them the villain in my life.
Yeah, man, I just want to say one thing that brings up for me as we close this. You know, when I was dishonest in my former self, because I was a people pleaser.
Yes.
And, you know, to the extreme. And what's really interesting is, when I was dishonest, I thought everybody else was dishonest. I trusted nobody. And it sounds like this is what you're saying. And as I cultivated honesty, and now I go, I'm the most honest person I know, and I trust implicitly unless I have a reason not to. And it sounds like this is exactly what you're saying. So when we're projecting out there in the world, fighting against these big bad things, oftentimes that's the fight that we need to look at within ourselves. And I think that is huge. Imagine if we did that every single time as we're beginning this journey as men. We essentially go, wait a second, what is it about myself And, you know, we hear this all the time, you know, Thoreau with civil disobedience, Gandhi, be the change you want to be in the world, you know, you want to see in the world. This is the standard that we can hold as men. And it just makes me think that that is what the true warrior essentially is. He's living a standard.
Yeah.
And in that living of that standard, he is inspiring himself and others. And that's sort of where fulfillment comes from. So tell us where, because I know people are going to, men are really going to love this conversation. I think I loved it. But tell us where they can get more of your work and get deep down. Because one of the things that struck me about it is you have some very deep models from that you've kind of, you know, sort of brought together from various sources. You know, you got Plotkin in there. You got Joseph Campbell in there. You've taken a lot of these things and it seems like really formulated a really neat way. So how do they get in touch with you? How do they work with you? How do they get more of Kelly?
Thank you. Yeah, well, easiest way, find me on my website, Kelly, Kelly Gardner, G-A-R-D-N-E-R, K-E-L-L-Y, G-A-R-D-N-E-R. On the web, I'm Community Gardner. You can find me on Instagram, at Community Gardner. You know, really, that is my core business, is creating communities that that bring people together in a way that uplifts all of life. The next program that I'm launching is a program for fathers. It's actually called Number Four Fathers, and really focusing on new and expecting fathers. How do we get involved at this time of life that is one of the most critical times, not just for becoming the father that I want to be, but preserving the relationship and building upon the relationships that I want to have with my partner. So many of relationships within that first year turn towards divorce because of all the pressures that are faced on. How do we build healthy, localized communities and families by giving father support in that time, and ultimately utilizing fatherhood as a springboard for finding and fulfilling the purpose that I have out there in life? And I love how you mentioned that about your father, you know, and it's a testament to why and how you are here doing all the great work that you're doing today, is because there was a man in your life that was able to hold that energy for you and hold that space for you to fully initiate into who you are.
Yeah, and what gratitude I have for that, and what gratitude I have for you, who's going to take men and teach them how to be this. Because imagine if we had more fathers who took this on, understood how to do this, and there's no shame in it. We don't know how to do it because it hasn't been modeled for us. No. But learning to do that, and then the difference we can make. You know, it's funny, I oftentimes think about this idea of, like, I can write books and touch a lot of people, but if I raise a good human being and they go out in the world and their ripples last forever, this is how we make the difference in the world that we, I think, seek to make. I love this conversation, Kelly. Thanks for being here, brother. Amazing. I mean, just so amazing. Now I know why everyone said we had to get together. I appreciate you, brother.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much, everybody, and we'll see you at the next show.